The appearance day of Sri Advaita Acharya. We'll begin by reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we will discuss a little of the unlimited glories of Sri Advaita Acharya Prabhu. It is stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita that by the mercy of Advaita Acharya, even a fool can speak something of his unlimited glories. But first, we will discuss the glories of Hiranyakashipu's plan to become immortal. Translation. This is Sri Hiranyakashipu speaking. Why is he called in the Shastra Sri Hiranyakashipu? First of all, because he had a son such as Prahlad Maharaj. And secondly, because he'll be killed. Hiranyakashipu will be killed by Lord Nrsingadev. He's speaking to Lord Brahma. Grant me that I not die within any residence or outside any residence. During the daytime or at night, nor on the ground or in the sky, grant me that my death not be brought by any being other than those created by you, nor by any weapons, nor by any human being or animal. Purport. Hiranyakashipu was very much afraid of Vishnu's becoming an animal to kill him, because his brother had been killed by Vishnu when the Lord took the shape of a boar. He was therefore very careful to guard against all kinds of animals. But even without taking the shape of an animal, Vishnu could kill him by hurling his Sudarshan Chakra, which can go anywhere without the Lord's physical presence. Therefore, Hiranyakashipu was careful to guard against all kinds of weapons. He guarded against all kinds of time, space, and countries, because he was afraid of being killed by someone else in another land. There are many other planets, higher and lower, and therefore he prayed for the benediction of not being killed by any resident of any of those planets. There are three original deities, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara. Hiranyakashipu knew that Brahma would not kill him, but he also wanted not to be killed by Lord Vishnu or Lord Shiva. Consequently, he prayed for such a benediction. Thus, Hiranyakashipu thought himself securely protected from any kind of death caused by any living entity within this universe. He also carefully guarded against natural death, which might take place within his house or outside the house. Sri Hiranyakashipu has everything all figured out. Both by historical research and by scientific analysis, he's quite confident he has become immortal. Now you remember, in the beginning of their encounter, when Lord Brahma first came to see him, Lord Brahma told him, I am from the type of living entities that does not die. Because at the end of the cosmic span of time, Lord Brahma and his devotees go back to Godhead from Brahmalok, in universes where Brahma is a devotee of the Lord. So Brahma is telling him, I'm from another caliber, but you, Hiranyakashipu, are amongst the living entities who are subject to die. Hint, your plan's not going to work. But anyway, ask me what benediction you like. Hiranyakashipu, with his brilliant brain, figures out a way how to become immortal without Brahma directly granting him immortality. In Hiranyakashipu, you see the apparent triumph of material intelligence. I am amongst the living entities who are subject to death. You are hinting to me that my plan to be immortal can't be granted by you. But still you're going to give me whatever benediction I want. Well, let me ask for benedictions in such a way that I'll put together a package of immortality. Like a venture capitalist, you know, they get a little, you know, some money from here, some money from there, and they put together, a takeover package, take over a corporation. So, Hiranyakashipu thought he would do like that. I'll cobble together a package that will end up with the same result. I'll be immortal. His desire was to take the post of Lord Brahma. He didn't really care so much about Brahma, but he was smart enough to know you've got to do austerities and worship Brahma. And then, if not in this Brahma's lifetime, in the next lifetime, I'll get his post. This is determination. Ambition. To live in this world and strive for material goals requires some ambition. No matter how small, you have to have something that pushes you on day after day. Even just the ambition to make it through another day and help your family members to make it through another day. That is also ambition. Hiranyakashipu has extraordinary ambition. He wants Brahma's post. And therefore he's performed such severe austerities. Last night we were speaking to the audience of young men about the austerities required in the working world in the cities these days. Commuting takes such a toll on the human spirit and the human physiology. We explained to them how scientists, because they always have to calculate something, have stated that for every minute of commuting time added to your life, your health goes down and your mental satisfaction goes down each time you add 1 minute more of commuting on the clock. And we explained to the young men, because naturally some of them were considering what would be their lifestyle in the future. Could there be a future in the Brahmacharya ashram? We wanted them to understand the realities of striving in material existence. It is not that the struggle is getting any easier. Indeed, the work pressures, the stresses of commuting are taking a deadly toll. We explained that in one group term called the long commuters. How did scientists group persons in the category of long commuters? If you commute 40 minutes one way and 40 minutes the other way, you're in the category known as long commuters. How does that sound for Mumbai? 40 minutes one way, 40 minutes the other way would be considered quite luxurious. And then there is the group of extreme commuters beyond 40 minutes in each direction. But just in the group of the long commuters, 40 minutes this way, 40 minutes that way, it was scientifically established that 37% immediately required serious medical attention. And this study was done in very industrialized, first-class infrastructure country like Germany. What to speak of other countries? Austerities performed to taste lasting satisfaction. This is what material nature drives us to do. You want to taste rasa, and therefore you have to work and commute. Krishna plays a flute to show you that he is all play and no work. Krishna never commutes. He plays his flute and all the pleasure comes to him. Indeed, he is pleasure itself, the reservoir of pleasure. And when Krishna wants to enjoy, he expands his pleasure energy. Krishna is inviting you. Use your short human form of life to come to me. Now, Hiranyakashipu's plan is how to avoid the Supreme, how to contrive a package from Lord Brahma that will be as good as immortality. Just see the pride, the ambition. He wants to be Lord of the universe and to have eternal material sense gratification, which is impossible. Now, keeping all that in mind, the arrogance of Hiranyakashipu, the extraordinary, unparalleled material ambition, the austerities that he performed. Think about Sri Advaita Acharya Prabhu, who is, generally speaking, Mahavishnu, breathing out all the material universes. And more technically speaking, is a limb of Mahavishnu. A very intimate expansion of Mahavishnu. Who, after Mahavishnu glances over the material energy, this special planary of Mahavishnu, this limb of Mahavishnu, infuses the spiritual energy with the material energy. That is Sri Advaita Acharya. Kamalaksha, the lotus-eyed Advaita Acharya Prabhu. What does Advaita Acharya do? That intimate limb of Mahavishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he comes in Chaitanya Leela as a servant to taste the truly immortal nectar of devotional service to Lord Chaitanya. He demonstrates that by preceding Lord Chaitanya's appearance, and he surveys the atmosphere around him. He does what the various strategic planning groups on various continents in ISKCON do. It's called environmental scan. What's happening around that is relevant for forming preaching strategy. So Advaita Acharya, he does that environmental scan in Navadvip. Although such a brilliant center of learning, Advaita Acharya is hard-pressed to find genuine bhakti, as you know. And he gives the conclusion of his scientific research. Keho pape, keho punye, kore vishaya bhog. Bhakti ganda yate. Bhakti ganda nahi yate, yaya bhava rog. Everywhere I turn, I see people performing good karma, punya, or sinful activities. But nowhere do I find a bhakti ganda, a trace of bhakti. And only through bhakti can bhava rog, the disease of material existence, be extinguished. To think of material existence as a disease helps us very much to quench our ambition, our drive to get ahead. Why implicate yourself further in disease? Why not take the solution to become free from this disease of material existence, bhava rog? Literally, the rogue, the disease of becoming and unbecoming. The disease of coming into being and going out of being. Why not stop that fever? Advaita Acharya looked around and he saw there is not a trace of bhakti. Now, try to understand the core of Advaitacharya as presented by Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Karuna Hridoy, heart of compassion. With that heart of compassion, because Advaitacharya has nothing to do with material existence, and therefore he can understand fully the pitfalls and illusions of material life, and therefore he can be truly compassionate. With that Karuna Hridoy, he considers, what can be done? What can be done? What can be done? So he has the Karuna Hridoy, the heart of full of compassion, because he has nothing to do with the material energy. Think about that. How can we truly be compassionate toward others when we are attached to the material energy? As long as we're attached to the material energy, we're part of the problem that we're trying to solve. Advaitacharya is teaching us. He's Advaita because he's non-different from the Lord, and he's Acharya because he teaches the path of bhakti. He's showing how to fulfill the desires of the Lord by not having any attachment for the material energy, and therefore one can genuinely feel for others. One can genuinely strive to help others. With that heart of compassion, he begins to consider with his intelligence, which is described as Shuddha Bhava, pure mentality. He has no other interest than to satisfy his Lord's desire, to satisfy the desire of Lord Chaitanya, even though Advaitacharya is Vishnu Tattva. Just see, he's the Supreme Lord, yet he simply wants to be a servant of Lord Chaitanya. Compare Lord Advaitacharya's attitude with Sri Hiranyakashipu's attitude. How is it that, generally speaking, Mahavishnu, from whose pores come unlimited universes, wants to be a servant? This is the mystery revealed by Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the incarnations of God would rather be servants. They take joy in the conception that they are servants. This is their pleasure, considering themselves to be servants of Lord Chaitanya. As you know, Advaitacharya, he's the disciple of Madhavendra Puri. He's the godbrother of Ishvara Puri, Lord Chaitanya's spiritual master. But Advaitacharya doesn't want Lord Chaitanya to worship him as his superior, as the godbrother of his spiritual master. Advaitacharya always sees himself as the servant of Lord Chaitanya. Although he's Vishnu Tattva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Chaitanya Charitamrita describes how this bhava of feeling, I'm the servant of the Lord, is the gateway to unlimited happiness. It's dasa bhava. This is the particular type of bhakti bhava, ecstasy of devotional service, that Advaitacharya specializes in. So much so that suddenly he can jump up and start dancing. I'm the servant of Lord Chaitanya. I'm the servant of Lord Chaitanya. I'm the servant of his servant. Nityananda Prabhu and I are both servants of Lord Chaitanya. In this way, Advaitacharya shows us the path of bhakti, even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He derives more pleasure in his role as servant of Lord Chaitanya than he does as Mahavishnu, the intimate limb of Mahavishnu. This is a lesson for us and in terms of what to do with our ambitions, our drive, our abilities, our energies. Hiranyakashipu is showing one way. Challenge the whole world. Squeeze out a benediction of immortality, apparently, from Lord Brahma, and then terrorize the universe. and we see the genuine Lord of the universe wanting to be a servant and taking joy in that conception. We should look at how we conceive of ourselves, Abhimana. What is our self-conception? Based on your self-conception, you will plot out a life for yourself. Advaitacharya Prabhu is demonstrating the self-conception of being a servant of Lord Chaitanya, no matter how powerful one is, even if one is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. And how powerful is Advaitacharya? In his capacity as servant, he invites into the world the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because when considering in the ecstasy of Shuddha Bhava, pure consideration without any trace of selfish interest, no trace of material selfish interest. Of course, the selfishness of the Supreme Personality Godhead brings about the welfare of everyone because everyone is part of the Supreme Personality Godhead and the Lord is the self of the self. Without any trace of selfishness as we know it, in this Shuddha Bhava, Advaitacharya thinks, how can the world be benefited? Because bhakti ganda nahi, there's not a trace of bhakti, even in Navadvip. Although the seat of such extraordinary learning and the capital of Karmakanda is no bhakti. An extraordinarily lamentable situation. Advaitacharya, along with the Shuddha Bhava, has dainya, humility. We discussed last Gaur Purnima about dainya and Sanatana Goswami's very deep presentation of dainya in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Dainya in its perfection means someone has all good abilities, prominent expertise, but still they think, I have nothing. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, your mercy is all I'm made of. Not that the person is necessarily incompetent, lazy, and unable to get anything done, and therefore humble. The deep definition of dainya is that even the person has so much ability and expertise, still that person thinks, I can't do anything. I'm useless. Advaitacharya, how incompetent and inexpert is he? He infuses the material energy with the spiritual energy and in that way brings about the cosmic manifestation. Yet, when he considers how to benefit the world and rescue the world, he feels in dainya that only Lord Chaitanya himself can solve this situation. Even I can't do anything about it. Let me, as a servant, petition for the master. This is Advaitacharya Prabhu teaching us how to carry on the Harinam Sankirtan movement. As servants of the Lord. You know how Advaitacharya decided that because Krishna can be purchased just by offering tulsi leaf and water with devotion, therefore, he decided to worship the Lord in that way. Because of Advaitacharya's call for the Lord appeared. This is a relationship, this is an occurrence happening because of a relationship of love. The Lord loves to appear in his eternal forms for the pleasure of his devotees. The Lord is known as Dharma Setu, the protector of Dharma. That protector of Dharma manifests in this world because of the desire of devotees. Advaitacharya understood that point. Therefore, he concluded, let me worship the Lord with Tulsi Devi and Gangajal, and in this way, bring about his descent. The Lord will reciprocate with me and my loud cries, because I know that he hears the pure desires of his pure devotees, and I am his servant. This is the Shuddha Bhava, the intellectual consideration, 100% pure, of Advaitacharya Prabhu. The insight is given by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. You see all the components of a pure devotee of Lord Chaitanya through Advaitacharya. That's his service to demonstrate the pure path of bhakti as a person non-different from the Lord. And just see his abhimana, his self-conception. Although he's Vishnu Tattva and non-different from the Lord, he never demonstrates merging into the Lord. He shows servitude. In other words, if I do this, and I'm Vishnu Tattva, what to speak of you? And he shows the ecstasy of this Dasa Bhava. He demonstrates the attractiveness of devotional service to Krishna because of his desire. Lord Chaitanya appears. And because of the desire of Advaitacharya, Lord Chaitanya disappears. Jagannanda Pandit, every year we go from Jagannath Puri to Bengal to bring gifts to Lord Chaitanya's mother on behalf of Lord Chaitanya, and to bring prasad, Jagannath prasad, to Advaitacharya and the other devotees. Every year he would do that. Lord Chaitanya was always most considerate of Shachimata, even though he's living in Puri. In fact, he told her, as you know, I'm going to live in Puri because that way you'll hear news of my activities. And once, when he sent Jagannanda Pandit to Bengal, he told Jagannanda Pandit to tell his mother, I'm not going to go anywhere else outside Puri for the rest of my life. Somehow or other, in madness, I've taken sannyas and I've given up my devotion to you. But I'm not going to go anywhere. I'm going to stay in Puri. And he sent her, on this particular year's mission, he sent her the pastime clothes of Lord Jagannath when he's dressed as a cowherd boy. He sent those with Jagannanda Pandit to Bengal, along with prasad. Lord Chaitanya carefully packaged the prasad for Advaitacharya and others, because the giving of prasad is a loving exchange. It's like yesterday, His Holiness Chandramali Maharaj was relishing the prasad seva here in this temple. How the devotees, they so carefully and lovingly distribute prasad and take the prasad in a very devotional attitude. So just think of Lord Chaitanya carefully wrapping Jagannath Prasad to send to Bengal. This is the Lord showing how to make loving exchanges. So Jagannanda Pandit went and he told Shachimata, once again reminding her, whenever you offer food, Lord Chaitanya is there. He delivered the gifts. He delivered the prasad to the devotees. And then he asked their permission to go back to Puri. He asked Shachimata's permission. He asked Advaitacharya's permission. Throughout Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll find everyone's always asking permission of someone. It's not a very good shastra if you want to be completely independent. Even the completely independent Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always asks his devotees, will you finally let me go to Vrindavan? If you give me your blessings, then I can be happy on the way there. And then the devotees always say, oh, why should you ask? You are the completely independent Supreme Personality of Godhead. You will go, no matter what we say. But nevertheless, can you take some of us with you? And this way it just goes on and on like this. No one just asserts themselves. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Advaitacharya, they just, I'm going to do this, and totally devoid of dealing with the Sangha of devotees. This is what makes Chaitanya Charitamrita just so sweet. The crisscrossing of permissions, consent, blessings, it's just going on all the time, showing us how to properly behave. So you would think, with mundane understanding, or a typical urban cosmopolitan how to swim with the sharks understanding of business life, corporate life, university life, if when it's time for Jagannanda Pandit to return to Puri, he just goes. What's a big deal? This shows our coarse nature. One devotee here asked me to speak in the Brahmacharya class. I wasn't not able to do that, but he gave me the theme. I felt he was giving a message to me personally. The theme of the talk was supposed to be going from a ruffian to a gentleman. Chaitanya Charitamrita teaches you how to do that. If you study it very closely and minutely, the interchanges between devotees, how they interlock and interact, it gives you so many lessons. So instead of Jagannanda Pandit, who's an intimate associate of the Lord, he says, okay, I'm going back to Puri. It's my decision. No, he asks the permission of the senior Vaishnavas, Shachimata, because of being the mother of Sri Gaurahari, she's a senior. So he asks, can I have your permission to go back? He asks Advaitacharya, who is the elder disciple of Madhavendra Puri. He asks, can I go back? And they both give him their permission. But Advaitacharya adds something very interesting to the farewell and permission. Yes, you may go, but I would like you to deliver a special poem that I have written to Lord Chaitanya, a special message. Very poetic. This message was. And he recited it to Jagannanda Pandit. Tell Lord Chaitanya that he is a madman in ecstatic love, and now everyone in the world has become mad in ecstatic love of Krishna. He's a madman. The world has become mad in ecstatic love. The conclusion, in the marketplace, there's no longer a demand for rice. Advaitacharya elaborated that because the whole world is drowning in ecstatic love, no one is interested in the material world anymore. Advaitacharya said, please give that message to Lord Chaitanya from one, myself, who is also drowning in ecstatic love. Jagannanda Pandit smiled to himself when he got the message, and he indeed went to Puri and delivered the message to Lord Chaitanya. The whole world is drowning in ecstatic love. They become mad in ecstatic love, just like Lord Chaitanya. In the marketplace, there's no more demand for rice. Of course, Advaitacharya preceded his mystical message by offering obeisances hundreds and thousands of times. When Lord Chaitanya heard the message, he was quiet. He smiled very gently to himself. Commented, "This is the desire of Advaitacharya." The other devotees, they couldn't understand what this message meant. Only Srubdhamadhar, the intimate associate of the Lord, he understood the message, but nevertheless, he asked Lord Chaitanya, "What does this mean?" And Lord Chaitanya explained, "Advaitacharya, this is how he does things. He writes mystical messages that no one can understand. This is how he conducts his pastimes. He does things like this." And then Lord Chaitanya partially explained that another symptom of Advaitacharya is that he's a great worshiper of the Lord. He very strictly follows the rules and regulations of worshiping the deity. He invites the deity to come. He worships the deity. And then, when he's finished worshiping the deity, he sends the deity away. Srubdhamadhar became a little morose hearing this. He knew what it meant. The rest of the devotees continued to be amazed by Advaitacharya's mystical poetic compositions. From that point on, Kaviraj Goswami describes that Lord Chaitanya's ecstasies in separation from Krishna doubled in intensity. They became even more transcendentally, inconceivably wild than ever before. Yes, by the desire of Advaitacharya, Lord Chaitanya comes into this world. And when Advaitacharya tells him, "Your mission is successful. No more demand for rice in the marketplace. Everyone's drowning in ecstatic love. You've done this." Then Lord Chaitanya leaves. This is the power of Sri Advaitacharya, who, although he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, takes the role of a pure servant of Lord Chaitanya and demonstrates to us the dasa bhava, the ecstasy of being a servant of the Lord, rather than to be the master, rather than be the controller. Today, on this auspicious appearance day of Sri Advaitacharya, we can offer our glorification and gratitude. How this Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu Tattva, is showing us the path of bhakti, and indeed would rather be addressed as a servant of Lord Chaitanya and a servant of his servants than to be addressed as a Supreme Personality of Godhead. He derives more pleasure, more ananda, in that conception of seeing himself as a servant of Lord Chaitanya, the servant of his servants. We will stop here and ask if you have any questions or if the senior devotees want to add something.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj, for your wonderful class. Maharaj, one devotee asked me a question. He was asking me that regarding this etiquette, which was explained how devotees take permission from each other. He was mentioning that when some devotees meet after a long time, if they meet after a long time, a gap of many days, and then he said, I was offering my obeisances to one senior devotee, but he didn't acknowledge. So later on, I asked him, so he said, you have become very sensitive after going out. So I explained to him that maybe as one advances in Krishna consciousness, we have heard that the person becomes more sensitive to devotees. It is not bad to be sensitive. So can you just explain this, man?
If you want to pay obeisances for whatever reason, feel free. There's no law against paying obeisances. Just pay obeisances to your heart's content. But that doesn't mean you as you're going down, you're watching, see if the other person pays. Just pay obeisances as an expression of your heart, and whether it's reciprocated or not, don't worry about it. Yes, as one becomes more Krishna conscious, one becomes more sensitive to the service of the Lord. So maybe, who knows, maybe the other devotee didn't return the obeisances because he had some devotional service on his mind. He might not have seen you, or maybe he had to rush somewhere. Or you always give the devotee the benefit of the doubt. Not that. I'd like to explain to you that 13 days ago, at 1:02 in the afternoon, I wrote it down in a book. I paid my obeisances to you, and I noticed that you did not return the obeisances to me. Now, could you kindly explain the reason? You're very busy in devotional service. The devotee is very busy. So you assume the best, that, he had something on his mind, or he was rushing this way, that way, or maybe even he wanted to teach me something. How to causelessly pay obeisances. All right, I'll take that mercy from him. It's always nice to give devotees credit for having a good reason. You know, we're trained from our material existence to be skeptical, be doubtful of anyone's good intentions. Reminds me of another conversation I had yesterday with His Holiness Chandramali Maharaj. He had the task of giving feedback to a senior devotee. And so he was wondering, due to being very sensitive, he's thinking, how to best do this? Not that he didn't know, but he just decided to discuss it with me just to give me, some lessons for myself. We discussed how you have to give someone the credit for having good intentions, even though maybe things didn't come out in the right way or the best way. What really wounds devotees' hearts and cracks devotees' hearts, splits their hearts, is when you just deny they had any good intention whatsoever. And then you correct them. This is very painful. It's often been said by ISKCON leaders that this is a movement of good intentions. Although sometimes there are problems, sometimes in the worldwide scheme of things, the worldwide network of ISKCON, sometimes there are things done that shouldn't be done and like that. But overall, this is a movement of good intentions. So if you respect that in someone that I feel you have good intentions, you respect those intentions, and you magnify those good intentions, it's much easier to correct or to point something out. You can say, I really know that you meant to be very inspiring by this action that you did, and you wanted to do something to increase Krishna's service. But somehow it may not come out that way to others. So why don't we work on it in some kind of way to package your good intentions better so that the result can be more, you know, productive, more pleasing. And generally any devotee will say, oh, well, thank you, yeah. I meant well, but now I can see it didn't come out that way. Yeah, I didn't express it in the right way. Oh, thank you. But if you just, like, take a knife and go right for the heart. You demon. How could you write something or do something like this? You fool. Disgraced. The society of devotees. I mean, then devotees get totally shattered and then they become combative. Who are you to say that to me? And then they go and find some devotees who are friends with them and share their view. You're with that guy. He did the same thing to me 1 year ago. And things just go, you know, increase and increase and increase. In volatility and explosiveness. All because someone's good intentions were ignored or disputed. So if you always remember, Chandramali Maharaj and I were discussing, that 99% of the time, devotees have good intentions. Reminds you of an interesting example. I'm trying to think whether I should say it or not. All right, I'll try. One devotee told, and this is an example of how you have to really try to appreciate someone's good intentions. He told another devotee that, let me explain why we have to crush you. We have to crush you because you do too many things too well. You manage, you make devotees, you write, you intellectualize. It's just too much, you understand? Therefore, we have to crush you. You understand, right? So, I had to respect that devotee's good intentions because he really wanted me to appreciate his good intentions. You know, this is the way things work, you know, in bhakti, you know? And, I just had to respond in this way because, you know, it's for your betterment. So I okay. Thank you. But still, in such situation, I appreciated that the devotee, amazingly enough, it's hard to understand, I know. But the devotee wanted me to understand his good intentions. So indeed, I had to think, you know, yes. He's trying to make me humble. I definitely need all the opportunities to become humble that I get. And he was, all right, it's very bad to say those kind of things to devotees, even with a straight face and have good intentions. But still, he was trying to elicit my understanding. You know, this is how it is, you know? This is just the way things go on, you know? You understand, right? Yeah, I understand. He was actually trying to, you know, with a straight face, trying to get me to appreciate good intentions. Yeah, the way things work in the Hare Krishna movement, at least in a certain part of the world, is that if you do things too well, you should be crushed. Because you're a threat. So, my point is that we can avoid so many nuclear wars. Nuclear power plant meltdowns. If we first try to see that the devotee has good intentions, no matter how it may come out, 99% of the time there was some good intention. Improperly executed or over-endeavor or something not done in the right way, but you'll always find generally at the core some hope for a good intention. And if you just recognize that spark and fan it, it's much easier to understand that devotee and the whole situation that happened. So that was a long answer to the question about obeisances. Anything else?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, I've heard it said that each member of the Panchatattva represents a different form of shelter, and that Advaitacharya is our Pancharatrika Vidhi Ashraya. So I was wondering if you could please explain what this means.
I'm not a good technical my brain is limited and not so good for these technical kind of details. You know, I just read Chaitanya Charitamrita and enjoy. Sorry. But I'm sure that there are much more technically precise and more advanced devotees who you could ask that question to, but so you please let me off the hook. I like to meditate it gets very technical, understanding Advaitacharya as Mahavishnu, generally speaking. The texts directly say he is Mahavishnu, and then there's the fine print. There's always fine print in spiritual knowledge. So, it took me a while to just be able to grasp how Advaitacharya is Mahavishnu, and then again, he's actually, more technically, he's a limb of Mahavishnu. So, that was enough for me. All right. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Just a few days back, a radical Hindu politician decided that Maharashtra...
What decided?
A politician.
Uh-huh.
That Maharashtra is meant only for Maharashtrians, and outside people living, coming from outer states, they're not welcome here. So there was a big fight. So how we can present it in a Krishna conscious point of view that such a philosophy is not correct?
Ishavashamidam sarvam. Everything is owned and controlled by the Supreme Lord. Problems simply increase when we say, this is our land and it's meant only for our body types. That tendency is there to worship the land. Lord Chaitanya and his devotees recognize that. There's not only the tendency to worship a person, there's also the tendency to worship the land. It's a part of the living entity's psyche, so to speak. please note that part of worshiping the land means that you consider the land yours, and therefore you don't want other people on your land. It's my Maharashtra. What is the solution? On this holy appearance day of Sri Advaita Acharya. Arajo Bhagavan Vijayasatanaya Tad Dhamma Vrindavanam. You want to worship the land? You worship Vrindavan Dham. That's Lord Caitanya's solution. You want to worship a person? Who do you find? A cricket player? A film star? No, Arajo Bhagavan Vijayasatanaya. Worship the son of Maharaj Nanda as the Supreme Lord. Tadama Vrindavanam. Worship the land of Vrindavan. And you like to worship a process. People today are enamored by scientific processes. They get things done. Make this world a better place. So, what is Lord Caitanya's solution? Ramya Katsudupasana Vajavadu Bhagini Alkalpita. There's no better process than the process demonstrated by the Vrajavadu, the cowherd girls of Vrindavan, in their loving Krishna. That is the process you should worship. And what else? People like books of learning. They want to venerate books of learning. So Lord Caitanya, he teaches Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam. Bhagavatam, that's the book you should worship. It's the spotless literature. And you want a goal of life to dedicate yourself to sacrifice yourself for. Prema Pamata Mahan. Love of God is the ultimate goal of life. So that's Lord Caitanya's solution to the problem of this is our Maharashtra and not your Maharashtra. To take that tendency and worship Vrindavan Dham. See how practical Lord Caitanya is? He knows you want to worship some tract of land. Okay, here it is, Vrindavan Dham. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Glory to Srila Prabhupada.